Welcome to the Lost Library, Seeker. Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to our first ever Lost Library Q&A session with some of the cast of Grayscale. Y'all, our listeners, got us here by getting us to 2,500 downloads since we started keeping track of things. Thank y'all so much. I hope you enjoy this. It's probably going to be a bonkers time if I had to guess. So let's have a quick rundown of who's here. I'm Matt. I'm the host and GM on Grayscale. And next we have...
Hi, I'm Alan, and I play Dame Mallory Montebank on Grayscale.
Hi, I'm Alice, and I play Aisha Eidolon, your ghost friend.
Hi, I'm Joe. I play your sex knight, Owen Bainbridge.
Oh, dear.
I think you mean my sex knight? Just clearing
it's
that up?
Anyone. It'll be anyone's.
I'm Nora. I play Molly Thomas on Grayscale. I don't have, like, a witty thing.
I'm Melissa Wilkinson, and I play Lori Bayer.
So we're just going to kind of run down a list of questions that you, our listeners, and all of the some of the cast members shot out to us. So we're going to stop right at the top. The first two questions come from @TeaWithDragons on Twitter. And the first question is to the main cast here. What were some of the main inspirations for each of your characters?
For me... my inspiration was the concept that GF stands for ghost friend instead of girlfriend.
It's so pure.
Wait, good. Does it not?
It's both, honestly. Oh, but okay. It also stands for gay frog or good frog.
Mm.
But I didn't think that was going to be relevant in this case.
Maybe down the line we might have like a Frog of Thunder kind of idea, but
yes.
For me, it was just we were discussing Grayscale, and Matt had sent us the books, and The Exile really stuck out to me. And I've always been fascinated by the secret language of fans that was used in the Victorian age. And I was like, oh, I really want a character that can do that. So the fan was actually kind of the inspiration that created Mallory.
Molly is every girl I ever want to be and or kiss.
That's somewhat worrying, I have to say.
I was going to say that's pretty awesome, but... You know,
no, I feel like worried but awesome is pretty accurate.
Also fair.
My inspiration for Lori was the first time I ever heard about Monster of the Week, which was through the Adventure Zone. And they were talking about all the different playbooks you could have, and just playing a mundane person really sparked my imagination. And I thought, what human being that I know would I most like to see fight a monster? And I decided it was my Aunt Jane. So Lori is based a lot on my Aunt Jane, but she is much sassier. I ended up playing Lori a lot softer and sweeter and goofier than her inspiration.
For Owen, it was very corporate. What can I consistently put out the best voice for, and how do I then work that into an entirely American setting? So basically, me being like, oh, I can't do an American accent. What accent can I do consistently? There we go. And that's like how I had to tie in with the Knights Magister stuff.
I have my attitude towards that as someone else who absolutely cannot do an American accent is to just pretend like there is no accent going on whatsoever. It's like, what do you mean? It's, I don't know.
Hey, your Southern accent isn't bad.
What's way... huh? When have I done that?
Have you not?
Not intentionally.
I thought we had. I thought on Halcyon we did an accent bit.
Not intentionally. I don't
okay.
think so.
Never mind.
So the next question from @TeaWithDragons, and this is going to be I think China just generally to all of us. It is, what is the first thing you do when you get to make a new character? So we could just, again, bounce around, whoever's got an answer. What's the first thing you do when you have a new character you get to make?
Make them the saddest backstory possible.
You certainly nail that.
That's just how I do things.
I mean, that's an important part for me, but the first thing I do is usually, like, pick some weird bullshit mechanic to do. Like, in 3.5, my character was psychic, and so instead of taking levels in a psionic class, I tried a couple of those, and then I was like, what if I just put this template on my character instead?
For me, I always ask the question, who are they? So I like, and I probably annoyed Matt so much with this, but I ask a lot of questions about what kind of world are we playing in? Like, what's the setting? Where are the boundaries? And then trying to figure out what character fits within those boundaries that kind of speaks to me and is interesting to me.
I was able to turn that back around on you and be like, I don't know, what are the boundaries, Alan?
Which was pretty cool, and is part of the reason why Joe and I and we worked together and came up with like the Knight's Magister and all this stuff. So,
and listen,
I have a very good trick for
making
characters, and this is going to be like a masterclass thing. So everyone listening better get out there like their notepads. As I have this one single question I ask myself when I get to make a TTRPG character. And that the answer to that kind of fleshes out everything that I want to do. So the question is, what kind of tragic dumbass lesbian am I making?
Oh my god, you just changed my life. Although Mallory is bi. She's not, but yes. Relatable.
I just try and collect a couple touchstones I know I can always return to. Most of my RPG experience prior to this was in Fiasco, which is no mechanics, it's just talking. So I needed to have a couple references I could always bring up in conversation. And like the things I had for Lori, the touchstones of her character were that she was a mom, she loved to build things, and she loved the band Heart. And I'm like, if I've got those, I can always return to those.
That's amazing.
That's very good.
One thing I always like to do as well is, beyond joke answer of sad backstories, which I always do, I always want something in my characters that I can relate to. And whether that just be morality or like certain personality tics, like something I can then latch onto from my own experience and dial that up or, you know, kind of play around with that to get myself into character.
Okay, so for the next couple, what we'll do is just every question, we'll just go down the list and y'all can ask it. If it's to me, I'll answer. And if it's to y'all, we all answer. So we'll start with Alan with this first question from Eli. So,
hey, Matt, what the fuck?
So I didn't know if I had any sort of strength with horror storytelling, and I wanted to try that. And apparently, it's not horror that I managed to tell so much. It's just like, I'm going to creep you out with some creepiness. And I make a lot of incel bad guys, apparently.
A lot? Is there like an extra one?
There's at least two, apparently.
Oh, damn it.
So, I don't know.
It's okay. We'll beat them up.
Yes, please. That's why they're there. Punch them in their dumb faces.
Yeah, this is another question from Eli or at the Viking Bear. Matt, is there a, scare quotes, big bad behind the machinations of everything going on? If so, is it supernatural or mortal in nature?
There is... In season one, what we have discovered so far, yes, there is a big bad. It is neither supernatural nor mortal in nature. It is outside, as was kind of shown in the vision Owen had in this last episode, or in the part two of episode 5. Yeah, it's outside in nature, and it's trying very hard to get inside.
But maybe once it gets inside, it'll decide it wants to be outside again, and it gets revealed that it was a cat all along.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine a cat causing this level of destruction on a cosmic scale, so that tracks.
Maybe we can make friends with it and teach it, hey, you're actually hurting us by existing. Can you go exist in another plane?
I'm pretty sure we're just going to piss it off and it's going to leave. Like, it's going to get so annoyed that we have to bicker and fight each other before.
And Mallory is just going to try real hard, sigh, and then just kind of apologize and walk away.
If it's a cat, in my experience, you can't force a cat to live anywhere. They'll live where they want to, so it might be best for us to leave.
That's, I mean, you know what they say, if it fits, I sits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or we just get a real big cardboard box.
Yes.
Yeah, a cosmic cardboard box.
A cosmboard. Cardmic?
Oh my god, that's so perfect.
Cardmic box, that's very good.
Sorry for spoiling season 4 of Grayscale, y'all.
Oh. Oops.
Joe, you are up next.
Yep. So this one is from Renee at Ray DNR. Hey, Matt, what the fuck?
So first off, Renee is the person who does our recap voiceovers at the beginning of every episode. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you, Renee.
Thank you, Renee.
Fate and the Fable Maidens is awesome.
Yes, it very much is. They're doing their first live show today as
oh,
of the
cool.
time of this recording. So another what the fuck question. Hold on. I had an answer for this. I had several answers for these. I had different answers for every single one.
So it sounds like that we need to vamp. So, Nora, would you describe Jason's fall to darkness in about 2 minutes so that Matt can think of his question or his answer to the question?
Yeah, he did it on purpose because of a prophecy.
Okay, cool beans. Go ahead, Matt.
I'm so mad.
You needed time. I gave you time.
I needed time to think, not time to be mad.
Nobody made you listen to us.
Oh, God, that seems to sum up a lot of things.
That's just the tagline for the podcast.
Nobody made you listen. Lost Library originally was going to be a much smaller cast and was going to be a Star Wars campaign. I think all four of those cast members are still on cast. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be really great. It was going to deal with time traveling Sith Lords and ancient curses. It was a lot of fun. And then Matt got really exhausted because he made a bad plan for that entire format. So that's why the fuck this happened.
I cannot believe you made something less Star Wars and then brought me on.
Oops. I have a consolation gift for you, Nora. It's your turn to ask a question.
Next one, also from Renee, is favorite story inspiration? I feel like this can come from anywhere, but what's a story that inspired you?
Oh, man. I've read some Lovecraft, which I think anyone can probably tell there's some threads of that in here. But also... And I think what really kind of directly inspired this and is more obvious maybe to some of the cast members right now, because they've done a few other nebulously canon kind of test games that we did before we recorded anything. But one of the biggest inspirations for this, for Grayscale specifically, was the King in Yellow collection of short stories. I didn't get that at all. Yeah, you know, listen, I'm not a subtle person. But it was just kind of that sense of something cosmic subtly intruding on the world was very much an inspiration. And then it just kind of got warped because I was like, subtle intrusions don't work great for audio drama in the current format. Like, the way I'm currently running it, it's not... Subtle's not great. So I had to get a bit more, like, up in your face. But, yeah, King in Yellow, if you have not read that short story collection, give it a read. It's very creepy.
Who is everyone's favorite NPC and why?
Shandy. Does Shandy count? Yeah. I fucking love Shandy.
She is one of the best things that came in from like another source. I think Riley brought Shandy in from another game that he runs, mm-hmm. and it's great.
So after the episode where Aisha got introduced to Shandy's as like a place, I've been imagining that she just hangs around at Shandy's a lot now because Aww. She knows it's a safe place to be a ghost, because mm-hmm. she used to never go outside because she was like, what if someone saw me? But now she just hangs out at Shandy's.
That's awesome. I'm gonna kind of buck the trend. I really like Father Milo.
Yes.
I feel like, well, here's the thing. I feel like there's a lot more to that character than we know, and especially the fact that he's working with the person that Mallory hates the most in the world, and is literally, that's her whole reason for being where she is to fight that person. There's a level of drama and mystery to Milo that's really intriguing to me.
I forgot to say that this question was asked by Portia at Dark Skin Daria. Sorry, Portia. And I'll say that my favorite NPC is Aunt Carrie.
Oh, I do like Aunt Carrie.
Yeah.
We haven't even seen her really on screen properly yet, and that's going to be a fun day.
Yeah, I love how she's clearly so weathered and so hardened and so stalwart and, like, completely unflappable. Like, she seems like nothing has ever shocked her, and I want to learn more about how she got that way and if anything ever will shock her, if anything ever will sort of break that composure that she has.
That's a character that is whole cloth from Christina.
Mm-hmm.
She needed kind of the mentor character for her playbook and her role, what she's doing. Man, there's a lot of really good that comes out of Aunt Carrie that we haven't even touched on yet. That's going to be just delicious
yes.
when we get around to it.
My favorite NPC is Cole.
Yes. Cole, that's so good. Except that he's a player character, but good.
Okay.
Is he?
I love that Matt's catchphrase for the podcast is "Hey Cole."
Hey Cole.
Yeah, hey Cole.
Anytime I say that, you just know something's going to go terribly wrong.
Well, really, it's anytime you say any of us with "Hey," insert our names here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's all in the tone, right? If I was just like "Hey," but it's when I go like "Hey, hey Mallory, hey Mallory,"
mm-hmm.
that's when something good's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's now become my goal. Anytime Mallory's on screen, I have to ruin her shawl. So.
Mm-hmm. Listen, you haven't
Is
made
she
me
run out soon.
You haven't made me bust out my, like, crying Foley work yet, so, like, bring it on.
Mallory just wants to be everyone's friend.
I'm going to have to do the cheap pop and say Brian.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
So, I
have to tell y'all, on the NPC side of things, Brian is probably one of the most heroic out of all of us.
Yes! I'm so proud of him!
Which is an odd evolution of the character, I think, if we're all being honest.
Shoutouts to Ben, though.
Yes!
Ben!
I love Ben, too!
Thank you for saving my life.
Yeah, I dropped that line in there. And I did it because I was like, well, this is a good way to make sure that Owen isn't dead. And it'll be just enough of a delay that one of the other people can rescue him. And now I'm just like, wait, what does this mean about Ben?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't listened yet, so I don't know what this is about.
Because, oh man. Yeah, because, yeah. I'm still not entirely sure what I just did to that good boy, but I did something to him.
And next okay. episode gets even more interesting, I feel like.
Yeah. So our next question is also from Portia, and it's, what ideas for playable characters did you have before you settled on what you're playing now?
I have one.
I have one too.
I think I have one too.
One of my original ideas, before we kind of knew more about the world, like I basically knew we were in Oregon and there was like big lake and a city. I just imagined like this hermit living in like a log cabin, and he would be the expert called Jeremiah, and he would basically be there to like basically hand out knowledge and like equipment and that sort of thing, and be kind of like the wise, creepy old dude that like lived in the middle of the woods.
That's super cool.
Well, that's very good.
And now that I put that out in the world, Matt, there you go.
Thank you. I needed more NPCs.
I was also considering the expert playbook, and I thought about being a romance novelist who wrote these bodice-ripping vampire romance novels and got so deep into the research that she found out that vampires and other supernatural creatures were real.
Oh, but that would have been the perfect way to pull one of our test groups.
Yes! Shelby and Nessa are still out there.
Yeah, they are.
And their third wheel.
Oh, I forgot. I should have said Grace for my favorite NPC. She needs to be in this at one point.
She does.
I didn't have a concrete other idea. I landed on Aisha pretty quickly, but I was considering a number of things, and they were all kind of weird things, because a running theme through all of my TTRPG characters is I don't like things. I tend to make things extra. I tend to make characters extra. So I was gonna, I really wanted the monstrous, or I was gonna be either the monstrous or the divine, or I knew I couldn't get chosen. But I was also looking into a vampire, maybe. But I ended on Ghost pretty quick.
I was also looking at a vampire, and I was like, the main reason that I didn't go with a vampire, aside from seeing that you had picked that playbook for a ghost, was that I knew that all my characters are trans women, and like vampires being predators, there's like some vibes there that I wasn't sure if I wanted to unpack. Yeah, so I opted to sort of back out and play just like a really disastrous sort of punk dropout trans lesbian. So,
you know, I never even considered that whole thing, which now that you mention it might also be kind of problematic with lesbian vampires in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a whole thing with lesbians being predatory and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
But never thought about it.
It's really interesting to try to unpack.
Yeah.
I definitely looked at... it just flew out of my head. The divine. I definitely thought about that in a game unrelated to Grayscale. I actually did a proto version of that character where she was basically... actually strikingly similar to Minnie, with the exception that she listened to the angels, and she was a little bit more Joan of Arc. But that was a lot of fun to play. But as soon as I saw the exiled, I started messaging Matt and be like, Matt, hey, Matt. This question is from Sam at Turley_girly19. If you suddenly developed an allergy, what food allergy would be the most devastating? I do have an answer on hand because, unfortunately, this happened to my baby niece. She became allergic to lactose. Not even lactose intolerant, allergic. They think she's grown out of it now, but the amount of stuff that we had to, like, go through for her dietary restrictions were astronomical. So lactose for me.
Wow. Is there such a thing as a capsaicin allergy?
I'm sure, yes.
Because yeah. I make everything as spicy as it can be, and it would royally fuck me up. I mean, it already does occasionally, but hey, it's worth it.
I drink a lot of soda. I don't know if sugar is a thing you can be allergic to, probably. You could probably be allergic to anything, I guess.
I feel like there's got to be like a Rule 34 equivalent for allergies. Like, if it exists, you can be allergic to it.
God, that's depressing.
Mm-hmm. If not that, then probably chicken, because, like, chicken's my main sort of protein jam.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, true. I always tell people, I think I could go vegetarian if it wasn't for chicken. Like, chicken is what prevents me, I think. I could give up red meat. I could give up pork. Chicken, though.
Mm-hmm. I have to admit, that's the opposite of my feelings. I always feel like chicken is kind of bland.
That's fair, though.
I ain't that big a fan.
Mm-hmm. I grew up on fast food, so, like, fried chicken fucked me up.
Heck yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to go get some Popeyes tonight.
Ooh, they got a $5 boneless wing deal?
Mm-hmm. So Sam is also a member of the Fate and Fablemans podcast. She plays their changeling barbarian, Twiddle.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I got to agree with Alan. Lactose allergy, like a proper lactose allergy, I'm like mildly lactose intolerant. But if that ever became like a full-on allergy, I think I might just not be a person anymore. Because I won't give up cheese. I won't. Yeah. I won't.
See, I was going to like custards and desserts and like give up banana pudding. No, thank you.
Yeah, I have a ferocious, monstrous sweet tooth. And if I couldn't just be filled with like frappuccinos and donuts and things all the time, which I probably shouldn't be, but that's how I like to live. If I had to live differently, I'd be very upset. I'd be a shade and a shadow of the woman I am now.
I guess just going off what I consume most, like either hummus or beer.
That's
my range, I'm afraid.
Being
you sound
allergic,
like a trash person.
Being allergic to chickpeas sounds awful.
Yeah.
In terms of like least pleasant rather than like most common food, if I were allergic to strawberries, I would really hate it.
Oh yeah, same.
So the following question is from Peter at SuperSugarBolt on Twitter. What D&D class is most accurate to you, IRL?
I have an answer for this. Hmm? Yeah, go ahead, Alice.
I'd say for me, it would probably be like definitely not wizard. I'm not a very studying person. It would definitely be a magic class because I'm weak as fuck. I think something with, like, high charisma, so I'd say sorcerer, maybe. Probably a divine soul sorcerer. I do like to heal people.
Yeah. I do love the divine soul.
Best D&D class.
Yeah.
I mean, warlocks exist in this world, Joe. my answer for best D&D class is that fits me most is probably mud farmer. Because, listen... I would not probably not be like a hero character in a D&D world. I wouldn't. No, thank you.
Can I change my answer? Because in a previous edition, there were, I think it might have been 3.5, there was a prestige class, which was the entire point of this prestige class was that you were a lackey. It was like professional squire or something.
Wow.
The entire point of the prestige class is you are focused on being... second to someone.
I love
that's
that.
Very good.
It's kind of amazing.
As someone who podcasts a lot, I would say bard specialization in orating.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Good.
I was going to say working class.
Oh, hey.
But you kind of took that one from me.
Sorry.
Honestly, I've been told mostly bard because I like telling stories and supporting people So I'm probably barred with maybe like two levels of paladin.
Nice.
I told this to somebody recently and they burst out laughing at me. They were so surprised. I'm a rogue.
Nice.
I have a deep, deep love of mischief, and I just want to know everybody's secrets. If I could be anything in the world, I want to be sneaky.
That's amazing.
And just know things.
I think everybody knows mine at this point.
I mean,
I'm the cleric mom friend.
Yeah, it's not even.
I would
question.
Have gone for cleric if it wasn't that clerics in D&D have like the whole like heavy armor melee thing going on, and see, I would die if someone put armor on me.
See, I'm usually the kind, like, my favorite kind of cleric to play, and people kind of give me a little bit of shit because I always play the same type, but I'm like, I get to play D&D so rarely, I always go back to the same type I like to play. I like to play, like, the ascetic type cleric, mm-hmm. the scholarly, I'm in robes, I'm in the back of the party, I am, you know, healing, but I am not a combat cleric at all. I can play a combat cleric if that's what is needed, but that is not my preferred method.
like I'm playing a paladin right now in a D&D game who doesn't wear armor and only fights with a shield.
Oh, that's so amazing.
Nice. You can mix things up. She's a little bit of Captain America.
Oh my god, that's so nice. Good.
This isn't an opinion one, but this is also from Peter. We all have to fight about the best M&M flavor.
But they're not
peanut butter.
They're not flavored, right? They're just different colors.
I assumed he meant things like peanut M&Ms or pretzel M&Ms or the new caramel monstrosities or peanut butter, which are implicitly the best.
I agree. Peanut butter are the best ones.
Original or
I'm
get the fuck out of my face.
I'm going to go with the best flavor, which is also the best flavor for ice cream, which is brown.
That really puts you to task.
The all-time classic flavor.
Brown.
My favorite are the M&M minis.
Those are good.
When I was... An exchange student at a school in Southern California, I also discovered the joys of the peanut butter M&M, which does not exist in Europe, at least
nope.
not my
It is very good.
And I enjoyed it very, very much. Though, to be fair, I probably enjoyed it more because the university that I was an exchange student at did not have a cafeteria, and there was no food places nearby, and occasionally I would be at school from like 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and I would not have anything to eat. Ooh. And it was the only thing that I could eat because it was in the single vending machine.
Mm-hmm. It do be like that sometimes.
Jinkies.
On this bitch of an earth, yes.
I'll just agree on principle peanut butter because we don't have it, but it sounds incredible. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that means we need to send you a bag of peanut butter M&Ms is what I'm
hearing. Yeah, guys.
Yeah, we'll send you a care package.
Mm-hmm. Some Popeye's fried chicken and peanut butter M&Ms.
And some like Star Wars comics.
Yeah.
And some sweet tea.
I can see if I can take some with me when I get back from the US, and it will probably be relatively cheap for me to mail them to you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's the only reason I came on this podcast
together.
To beg people for
treats
and
deliciousness.
US.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Well, I'm going to bow out, guys, now that I've got what I wanted.
All right. Good. This is the last we've ever seen of Owen.
No.
Yeah. Retcon. Owen actually just like died after being hung.
Yeah.
Owen died on the way back to his home planet.
No. Owen.
Do, 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 do. All right, Nora, you've got the next question.
This one comes in from Jams at JamsWilk at on Twitter. What is your favorite or top three podcasts? Every time something changes in my life, I end up dropping all my podcasts for like a month or two. So like I've gone through several like rotations of podcasts. I think currently number one podcast is Protean City Comics, It's just
it's so good.
Extremely good Masks actual play run by Brandon Leon Gambetta. You should definitely listen to that. Others include that's the Twitter handle. It's called Hot Singles. It's a music podcast by a good friend of mine, and it's like a real smart music podcast. And also, Got It Memorized is a Kingdom Hearts recap podcast. It's very good.
Heck yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mine are, it's going to show my nerd side here a good bit. My first one is called the History of Rome podcast, and it literally goes from the founding of Rome back in the mythological recounting of it all the way through the fall of Rome after the empires had split east and west. It is very good, and it's done, so you don't have to worry about if it's actually going to finish. It's all there. You can just go listen to it. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good chunk of history. My second one is gonna have to be okay, so my next two are gonna be Prism Pals and Fate and the Fabled Maidens. Fate and the Fabled Maidens, I know the ladies who make it. It's really fun, really great. And it's an all-lady run D&D podcast. And those are just great to have around. And I'm glad it's out there. And it's plus, you know, very funny. Like, they have a good cast of characters. And Prism Pals is just the exact right kind of bonkers for me. Like, they have a 10-year-old gnome who carries just a massive gun.
Yeah.
I need to talk to you about my next character after Molly exits the plot.
A 10-year-old with a massive gun?
I mean, that is kind of what Molly is on the inside sometimes.
it's you're not wrong. Alice?
My three are in no particular order are Friends at the Table. Mm-hmm. Alice Isn't Dead, which
Alice Isn't Dead is so good.
Also, it's really good, and also I am just in love with the voice of I think Jessica Nicole.
Jessica Nicole,
voice
yeah,
is just so attractive, and also she says Alice a lot, so I could pretend that she's talking to me. I'm married to her. And then one of them is I think it's stopped by now, but I listen to it a lot. During my internship, and it helped me in a lot of my world building for when I ran a D&D campaign for a little bit. It's Creature Culture, which is basically for every episode they talked about different fantasy creatures, usually monster races, and what their society would or could look like. And tries to reimagine that, and then stuff like just like how a gnoll society could work in a better way than just, oh, they kill things. And I really like that because I love monster races.
Oh, that's very cool.
That's awesome. For me, and this is kind of hard to narrow down, I'll just kind of go with what I've been listening to a lot of recently. I highly recommend the Jim Jammer podcast. It's by Crooked Russian, I don't remember their whole entire thing, but Annie Zard on Twitter. It is, again, it's another full female cast, and one of my favorite things about it is that one of the players' moms is also on the show, and they play in Spelljammer, and it's really fun.
It's Spelljammer. It's the best.
It's Spelljammer, and it's amazing. Mount Olympus podcast, which is a Hercules and Xena podcast. It's through Retrograde Orbit Radio. It's a bunch of college friends reminiscing about a very bad TV show, which I mean Hercules. They haven't started Xena yet where I'm working my way up through them. And for my last one, I'm going to go with Very Random Encounters. It's an RPG podcast where they randomize as much as they can about the setting, about the characters they're playing, anything and everything. They've gone through several different systems. They've done superheroes. They've done Dungeons and Dragons. So even the Game Master, a lot of the stuff that he's doing is randomly determined. So it's kind of fun to hear them try to get their way through that.
One of my favorite comedy podcasts right now is called Podcast The Ride, and it's all about theme parks.
Ooh.
Which is one of my
that sounds good.
Secret nerddoms. I love the show. They'll just talk for like an hour and a half about Disney parking garages, and I love it. One of my favorite media discussion shows is called Welcome to Deadcast, and it's these two adult brothers recapping every Goosebumps book.
Nice.
And one of my favorite audio dramas is King Falls AM, which is about this tiny, spooky Rocky Mountain town and just the like 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. AM radio station that runs there.
Hmm.
Two that I have gone back and listened to a bunch, like all the way through, are two audio dramas. So there is The Terrible Business of Salmon and Dusk. If you guys listened to the interstitial, I got to play Narrowdusk, and that was kind of a huge thing for me because I fucking love that story. And Underwood and Flinch, it's basically a modern day Dracula, like what if a vampire woke up in Spain? And, oh God, what's another one? Do I need another one? I think that's good. Go and listen to those two.
Yeah, they're all finished.
If you need a third one, you can just talk about Pot of Lore or Hollow Sweethearts or Twilight Radio.
My favorite podcast of all time is WTF Anime. You can find it on Twitter at WTF Anime.
Yeah, I purposefully tried to stay away from the Hey Jack and Josh podcast because I'm very biased.
Yeah,
it's tough to avoid those. Instead of being hunters, if the cast were monsters, what kind of monsters would we all be?
I think I have a cop-out answer here.
Uh-huh.
Is it a gurblin?
No, actually, it's just ghosts.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I already am a monster, but...
yeah, mood.
I think I would be a ghost who's also a vampire.
It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to pick a monster that exists within Grayscale? Because I want to be a fairy.
No, you can pick a fairy. This is any monster.
I just want to eat mushrooms, and when I give somebody a cookie I made, it traps them in my realm, and if I know their middle name, I've got power over them, and I just speak in riddles, and I'm covered in glitter all the time, and I can hover like 6 inches off the ground.
All right, Mab.
It's really hard not to just say vampire because vampires are really good.
And they're really gay.
Also that, yeah. Molly, personality-wise, is like, maybe like a dryad?
Nice.
That's hot.
Nice.
I feel like that could be the one. I was like, a satyr. No, wait.
Oh god, I'm out of time to vamp, aren't I?
Truest monster, a Star Wars fan.
The question asker's name again. Darn it, I'm so excited about all these good questions. This was asked by Jonathan at JFan999. Three nines.
It's not really a monstrous race, but I guess like some kind of like, it's very D&D, but like Blight Druid type of thing. Someone who wants to ruin the land with ice and fuck up the institutes of man. That's Barry Owen.
Yeah, that tracks. You started out as just kind of like a casually destructive character, and now you're just like, nah, burn it down.
Yeah. That's the monster I choose, humanity or capitalism.
All right, Alan, what would Mallory be as a monster?
Oh, Lord. If I'm just trying to make Matt angry, she would be a fae
yes!
of some sort. But more than likely, if she was a monster, she would probably be one of those ancient vampires. So she would still be holding on to some of the Victorian era stuff, but I feel like if she had actually lived throughout the intervening time, she would have adapted. It's just there are some things that she wouldn't have let go of.
That tracks.
it's Melissa that wants to be a fairy. If Lori could be any monster, I feel like she'd lean towards being a werewolf because she's got such strong protective tendencies.
Fucking Lori in November roaming the moors both as vampires is
fucking oh like yeah, the eternal love, it'd be great.
What I'm getting out of this session here is that we need to tell a vampire story on this podcast.
Yes.
Yep.
As somebody who's trying to write a vampire RPG, this intrigues me.
As soon as you have it ready to play.
I'm afraid I would be that one obnoxious person who is adamant that she's a good vampire.
Oh, Mallory yeah, they're all was good. Definitely all vampires are good.
Mm-hmm. What's really funny is that, like, the Mallory vampire is very similar to a character that I played in one of our, like, before the game sessions.
Yep.
And I might have written her backstory and she might know Mallory.
Ooh. It's very good. That character is still alive and kicking in the world, so, yeah. You know.
Nice. She's doing good.
NPCs. So, our next question comes from Alex at blue_thunda. And it's, what's your favorite grayscale moment, both from your character and from someone else?
For me, my favorite grayscale moment for my character is the beginning of next episode. because I really feel like it encapsulates who Mallory is as a person and, like, what she cares about. And my favorite grayscale moment for just, like, Alan, like, getting to either listen to or experience or whatnot. I really liked the in-depth character dive that we got for Owen in the last episode. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was really interesting, and it's a lot of fun to put the spotlight on a character and really dive into what makes them tick.
Hopefully we get to do more of those with everyone else so I get the same experience. So my favorite moment for Owen is it wasn't really a moment, it was more just that the entire like last 10 minutes of like joking at death but then being terrified of social interaction. That might just be the most me thing I've ever put onto Owen. And my favorite moment of all time from Grayscale is Laurie's flannel talk.
Yes. Yes.
That is a very good
one. I'm glad that inspired you. My favorite Lori moment is when she tries to take down a hellhound by seeing if it has the same sensitivity to chocolate that a normal dog does.
Y'all killed that dog. It was a good dog.
It deserved it.
And this isn't one particular moment, but one of my favorite little motifs in Grayscale is Minnie jumping in and out of windows. Like, in that gargoyle episode, I think she jumps in and out of a window like 3 times and nobody talks about it, and I love it. She's in a world of all these magic things, this girl just doing 6-foot leaps is nothing to anybody.
My favorite Molly moment is probably either the graduation situation or revealing to Matt that she had dated David.
Oh, that was beautiful.
My favorite moment in general is the end of the next episode. It's a mini moment.
Yeah, no, it's very good.
It's real good.
Of course, this will be out after the...
After that, yeah.
Episode. Oh, it will?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's the part where Minnie tries to swipe an Infinity Stone as a birthday present for Molly.
that was cute and awful.
And fact that her magic starts to look like Molly's in that scene. It's really
yeah. Aww.
And also marks my the second favorites. Time that Riley nearly died.
My favorite Aisha moment, I think either is her character introduction, where the moment that she is introduced to basically more supernatural things existing than just her, her response to this demon is to just ask a lot of questions all the time. It's either that or during the one episode that I've played of her, her pretending to be the ghost of Joan of Arc and nobody taking her seriously. She was really hoping someone would. She spent like 4 weeks on that costume. My favorite moment from someone else, I think I'd also have to go for revealing that David was the ex. It was just very good. Mm-hmm.
The reveal of David as the ex was very, very, very good. It's we're gonna come up to a question later on that that's gonna be my answer to. So, Alan, hey, you have the next question.
But Matt, pick your favorite moment from our characters?
Well, from my characters, it was any time that I try to make Milo seem nice and he gets dunked on.
Well, I don't remember that.
It's the best, and I love it.
When was Milo nice?
When has Milo done anything?
Oof. I mean, it's not that he's done nothing. Let's be fair.
I mean, he has done plenty.
Fraternize with things. My eternal enemy.
Yeah, that's one. That's one.
No, in seriousness, though, I think my favorite character moment that I've done so far has been November. Just all of November.
Mm-hmm.
Because she made something click in my head, and I was just like, oh, I get this person now. And when that reveal shows up, I'm going to be very happy for it. And character moment for someone else, when Molly just committed to the magic and just fixed the problem.
That was so good. It really was.
It was very, very good. Because again, that nothing that happened that whole episode was at all what I was expecting. And y'all just went for it. And it was great. Alan, you have the next question.
What other system would you like to... I guess this is for everyone, since everyone can kind of do it. What other system would you like to explore on Lost Library? I actually am working on editing episodes of a system that have some people actually in here. Where we're going to be playing the Mistborn RPG. And that's a lot of fun to play. So look forward to that soon.
I'd like to play The Quiet Year, which is my favorite game. Because
I'm not familiar with it.
I really love it because it's basically like a really slow like collaborative world building thing, which is just, it's so much fun.
It's really,
basically
really good.
You play with a bunch of people and a deck of cards, and it's a map drawing game where over the course of the game, you decide what happens to a small community over the course of 1 year.
That sounds amazing.
Like every round is like a week, and the cards you draw set up like a situation, and then there's a couple options that you pick from what happens, and then you flesh that out and introduce characters, and sometimes you hold like in-character discussions of that the community is holding, and you just pick like a person or a group of people in the town to roleplay as that may or may not have already been established. And it's so much fun. I'd love to play it sometime with all of you because I feel like you'd all be really good at it.
That sounds
and
really
it's
cool.
My favorite system, hands down.
I want to try
that.
It
does sound good.
It's fantastic.
I'd love to do Fiasco because it's pretty much all I know that isn't powered by the apocalypse, and there's nothing standing in your way of doing anything. If you you want to do something, it just happens.
I think that The Quiet Year and Fiasco are like perfect entry points for anyone who wants to play tabletop RPGs, mm-hmm. but doesn't like know if they can commit to big systems or learning lots of rules. Those two are like extremely good.
So there's some equipment to do this out there at the moment, but pretty soon Fantasy Flight are releasing a Clone Wars specific thing for their Star Wars role-playing game. And the Star Wars role-playing game is one of my favorite things ever.
Do you mean like a supplement or like a fourth main game?
I can't remember.
Okay. Because they've got Edge of the Empire, Age of Rebellion, and Fate...
Force and Destiny.
Force and Destiny.
Yeah. But in case you didn't know, a lot of the people here like Star Wars. But yeah, I love the whole Clone Wars era, so I would love to do that.
Yes, please.
Hello.
That sounds great.
A couple of things I've been looking into are maybe some games that I've written, but haven't really found the perfect one to slip in here yet. I guess I should like say what they are.
Maybe, yeah.
I have Dust Wardens, which is a game about polyamory and queer found families, and also monster hunting biker witches.
That sounds amazing. Yes. Yeah.
That one's almost done and is getting art currently. I also have Legends of Hyrule, my Zelda RPG that I wrote. And
that one is so much fun to play, Nora. Like, it's so much fun.
Thank you. You can listen to me run it in like half a month from now on I Am Here.
Awesome.
Nice.
So good.
And then the other one is one that is still sort of in production, but it's sort of a mech game specifically about our relationships to our bodies and being able to connect to each other's bodies and hearts. So, Hearts plus mechs. So, maybe someday I'll...
Mechster Hearts.
Mechster Hearts.
For me, I have several that I want to do. I can tell y'all that season two is going to be weird in that it's going to be set in a couple different games.
It's going to be fun.
As we go. It's going to be GURPS. Interesting. Listen, I don't want to kill myself trying to research all that. It's going to be in Powered by the Apocalypse games, but it should be a lot of fun. And for season three, I'm going to be, because I can't find a game that does what I want it to do, I'm going to write a Powered by the Apocalypse game for Grayscale season three.
That's amazing.
Awesome.
Because I'm a crazy person. So those are the ones I want to run on Lost Library. Alice, you have the first question here from Christina.
Christina is at CWoodsArt on Twitter.
And we love her very, very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yay.
The question is, hey, Matt, what the fuck?
So I did actually consider once upon a time running this game in Monster Hearts. And then immediately, once I actually met all of the cast, was like, no, that might be a crime. Like, that could be considered an act of aggression against the world at large. And so I decided not to. So that's what the fuck this time.
So also from Christina, what's the biggest surprise moment, as in a moment of gameplay or roleplay that made you reevaluate or change your plans? I have one for this. I was so ready to fight those collar boys in the werewolf episode. And then Matt pointed out that Brian exists. And I didn't need to.
You asked a leading question and I gave you the answer and it worked. Like, again, that was an episode where y'all did nothing that I thought y'all would. I shouldn't actually say that was an episode where y'all didn't do what I thought you did. I thought y'all would. That's been every episode. Y'all have never once done what I thought y'all would do.
For me, the scene that I mentioned before with Minnie has radically altered my plans for when Molly shows up next. Because the relationship between Minnie and Molly is something that I'm really eager to explore.
Yes.
I mean, I was going to do that eventually, but this has, like, stepped on the gas a little bit. So that's why I'm answering this question with that.
Well, and I mean, hey, not to burn anyone's spot here, but the all-teen episode with the five teens is coming up pretty quick here.
Yes.
Good, good.
So that'll be a thing. For me, the biggest like surprise moment that made me really change stuff was with you, Nora, when you declared that David was your ex. And and then just stopped his plan with like all of your magic. That just made me go like, okay, that whatever was going to happen isn't happening anymore because this is better. So it's your choice elevated David up from just like just some shitty teen up to someone that y'all are actually going to have to deal with now.
It's okay. I know all of his weaknesses.
I don't plan ahead very much. I think the only thing I thought about doing that I ended up not being able to do was that if stuff kept getting really bad with the werewolves, if Brian, our hero, had not stepped in, I would have pulled like the ultimate mom move and retconned that I had this thing in my truck left over from when my kids were little. And I would have gotten out one of those giant 3XL shirts with "This is our get-along shirt" written on it in Sharpie. And, like, shoved two werewolves into it and, like, that's seriously gotten down with, like, "You two need to shake hands and say you love each other. You don't have to like each other, but you have to love each other because you're a family."
Oh, man. The werewolves are doing good, everybody. Don't worry about it. They're doing good out in their woods right now. Everything's fine.
The main way that my plans were changed is I said earlier that one of the moments I liked was Aisha pretending to be Joan of Arc and nobody questioning it, and I had answers prepared. Aww. That she was going to give if people started questioning it.
Oh.
Like if someone was like, "But weren't you burnt? Why is your costume like whole?" I was gonna be like, "Shit, I forgot the burn marks," and stuff like that. And I never did that. Never got to do that. But it did actually change the way I'm doing that part of Aisha in the future. So, yeah,
nice.
Is it just a big sign saying, "Ask me about what historical character I'm dressing up as"?
Ask me how I died.
Oh no.
Aisha just lives for Halloween now, doesn't she?
All day is I feel like Halloween is probably weird for her. Maybe Halloween is the one day a year that she could leave the house.
I was about to say, is Halloween the day she takes off? Just like, nah.
I don't know. I'll have to explore that. I'll have to explore her feelings on Halloween.
I'm still waiting for Molly to meet Aisha.
They've absolutely met online.
They had to have, right?
Yeah. We've probably played like games together.
Y'all are hitting those Destiny raids hard together. It's great.
Is it hard to play Destiny as a ghost?
No. She has like she can play games.
She's corporeal.
That's like half of her relationship with Minnie is they play video games together.
Okay.
I feel like that's how they met.
For me, it was the latest group of episodes where Mallory walked in to basically a sass off between Minnie and Helam and just going, "Okay, so I wasn't intending for Mallory to kind of act like a mom, but here we go."
Sometimes you just gotta.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me rephrase that. Cole was always intended to be Mallory's magic son, but otherwise she was going to be a little bit more distant. But yeah, no, at that point it was just like, okay, we got to get stuff done. Let's go.
All right, Nora, you have the last of Christina's questions.
What's your favorite Monster of the Week character, class, or move? I mean, I know what most of y'all is going to answer is going to be. But I...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you guessed mine.
I'm a big fan of Molly's move that hasn't been used yet. Maybe we'll use that later. It's the Arcane Sight move.
Oh, that's very good.
My favorite playbook, just to get in front of it, is the Monstrous, because you get to play a sexy monster. And my favorite move, as much as I love like the way that the Spellslinger attack is crafted, just the idea that there is a move specifically written just to like calm people down in Soothe, I love the utility of that in a role-playing game.
Nobody's surprised, my favorite is the Monstrous too. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I have a move favorite. What is the fuck shit up move? Because that's my favorite.
Just kick some ass.
Yeah.
Is it ever called fuck shit up in another PBTA, or is that
it needs?
Oh
to
man,
be,
it
right?
should be right.
Yeah, it has to be somewhere. Mm-hmm. For me, I really do love the exile, and my favorite move is one that Matt hates, and I can't remember. I think it's called like. Old knowledge or arcane lore or something like that, where I can't glitch.
I hate that move. I hate it. you take away my failure axis.
What's going to suck, Matt, is like I'm taking that as my next level up.
I don't know if I'm going to let you.
The knights have access.
He has a very good story reason. He has a very good story reason. I'm teaching him the old magics.
You're taking away my failure axis, though, where I get to mess with you.
You but can do that without us failing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's true. Now, that's a very, very good move, and if you have access to the Exile playbook, you should absolutely take that move.
I love being a vanilla mortal. I love playing the mundane. And I don't put this to use as much as I should, but I really love the Power of Heart move, where when you're fighting a monster, if you help someone, you just automatically help as if you'd rolled a 10. Which is very sweet.
That is awesome.
And I mean, you say you don't use it, but you use it in your role play just all the time.
I don't mechanically use it, but I spiritually and emotionally use it. And while we're talking about abilities, I might regret this later, but recently I just remembered that original test game version of Brian had the ability to phase through walls.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
So I don't know if that's something you want to bring back into Brian's arsenal, or if that's too bonkers to continue with.
We'll have to see. Just kind of how things fall. For me, my favorite character class is the Chosen. I love it.
Oh, the one you refused us? Play? The one you kept from us? The one we can't play because of you?
Yes. Yeah. I love it. It's so good.
Cool.
Sounds great.
We're all chosen.
Especially
we're
because
all chosen
like,
now.
The core mechanic of the Chosen is that you are doomed. Which is just such a good twist on things. I love it. So that gets us down to our questions that you five have. So we'll just go in alphabetical order on this thing. Alan.
Hi. Hey, Matt, what the fuck, dude?
So it's funny that y'all mentioned the Chosen. I decided right at the beginning that in this world of Grayscale, there was one chosen person throughout the world that who would handle all this weird shit, and then immediately took that person out of play. And even better, y'all've seen her. And even more, y'all've heard her.
Uh-huh.
It's gonna be real fun when I introduce y'all to the Chosen. So that's what the fuck this time.
Okay, my next question is, which of us do you love the most?
I love our recap person the most out of everyone.
And we all hate you. And then finally, for everybody, and I guess this includes Matt, If you could play another person's character, who would you play?
I have two answers for this. From a logistics side of if we were like swapping characters and then going into the podcast that way, the easiest person whose voice I can replicate is Mallory's. I'm not sure I'd do her justice, but I could do a English Victorian woman. Actually,
I was
going to
say
answer.
Owen, so yeah.
Ooh, wow.
Serious answer, like the kind of character I like to play and the character that I've played most often is Cole, like the tortured little boy.
Okay. I also have two different ways of answering this. If we're like just trading characters, probably Friday.
Oh,
that would be fun. But also, in the event of a character body swap,
we need a body swap episode. Come on,
a body swap episode, please. I think it would be really fun to switch with Mallory.
Ooh, yeah.
From that very first all hands on deck meeting we had to all introduce ourselves to each other and talk about our characters, I was jealous I didn't think about being a ghost. I would love to be Aisha. I would just love to float through things and wear pretty dresses.
Mood.
I think I'd enjoy playing Lori. I would, yeah, I think I would.
I do love that we like all mirror each other and we're like, yeah, what do you do?
I think that
one of my favorite. Speaking of Aisha and Lori, them living together is one of the favorite things.
That is
my
so cute.
Things that have happened in this game.
If Molly did swap with Mallory, I would need Minnie to swap with Owen. That's just how that would have to happen.
Yeah, it would.
Oh no. Oh no.
I would feel sorry for Minnie in that case.
Just imagine Minnie teaching the music class, though.
She'd be so bad at it. She's such a terrible musician.
That sounds all fake. Right.
So I think that's all of Alan's questions. Joe, do you... Or actually, I'm sorry, that's not in alphabetical order. Alice, you're next.
So I'm going to start with my most important question, which is, Matt?
Uh-huh.
When will Hercules the Girlblin become canon?
So here's the fun thing. I'm so glad you asked this. Like,
the world
I'm legitimately,
needs to know.
I'm legitimately happy you asked this. I loved what y'all did with Interstitial. Like, I'll admit, I was nervous when I heard all the cackling about it, because for a while, all I heard was y'all making jokes about things, and then I heard Nora say in her message to me about what music was used, like, oh, and we used the grayscale theme, and I was like, wait, huh, what? but the whole way that that came together is just delightful, and I love it, and here's the true thing about this world, and pretty much every world. They all exist in an infinite universe, so there is 100% a world with Port Avalon as we know it, with Hercules the Girlblin in it.
And it's okay. The one the podcast
this
is set
on.
And y'all are going to see Hercules before the Grayscale story is over.
Yes!
Yes!
That's awesome.
I can't wait to have you do Hercules' voice.
I'm going to have to study up on that, because right now it would just come out as Angus McGee, Boy Detective,
yeah.
With a little bit of a laryngitis problem.
So, my next question is, what is it about Monster of the Week specifically as a game that made you want to run such a big project in it?
Oh, man. I really enjoy those shows like Buffy and Supernatural, the first couple seasons of it, that are just kind of people running around and dealing with the spooky stuff and then slowly discovering that there's more going on kind of behind the world. And the fact that I could like assemble a big cast and run with that because everyone, there was enough choices there. And I felt like there was enough room in that game to accommodate that many people. And I thought I could tell a really fun story with some kind of Lovecraftian kind of overarching theme to it. And that's kind of why I picked Monster of the Week. Like I said, I did seriously look at Monster Hearts and was just like, that's not quite as strong a choice for what I can do. So Monster of the Week accommodated what I thought I could do story-wise and allow all of you great people in to tell the story with me.
Doll flatterer.
Sure. I think what's interesting about the game itself is that Matt was very vehement that he couldn't do a comedy game. And then
yes,
every episode happened.
Yeah.
I still don't think I can.
I think you have surprised yourself many, many times because you've handled everything really, really well, buddy.
I mean, take that as a lesson if you have doubts about your own GMing ability, listeners. You can do it. We all believe in you.
And for my last question, what the fuck?
So this time, what the fuck is a... I don't know if any of y'all know how big a role the backstories y'all have given me have proven to be. Like, specifically, I want to mention the Knight's Magister, because, jeez.
I don't know what you're talking about. They seem totally fine, and I'm like hella rich now.
You didn't even talk to the Knight's Magister.
Wow, did I give you way too much money.
Mad.
It's totally cool. Like, it's... Don't even worry.
Right?
I'm sure nothing surprising is going to come out of that. But the Knight's Magister, like, what kind of everyone who's participated in that has produced is... I think Alan and I think some of us have talked about the possibility that when we get our Patreon up and going for Lost Library, some of the stuff that we want to do is maybe make like a world book out of this. Mm. And the Knight's Magister is going to be big.
I love
that's going to be a lot.
I love that the catalyst for this is I can't do an American accent, so I created the Knight's Magister.
here, context-free spoiler, the Knight's Magister 100% made Season 3 able to happen the way I want it to.
The Knight's Magister has been a lot of fun to play around with. Like, there's orders within the Knight's Magister that Joe and yes. I and Matt sat down and got to like dig into who does what and why and that kind of thing. It was a lot of fun to play with.
So that's what the fuck this time. Next up on the list should be Joe. Hey Joe, you got questions?
I do. I guess we'll start with the character one. What monster archetype would you and or your character date?
Well, I wouldn't say that Owen is a monster.
Owen's kind of a monster.
Owen is... do you remember the last person...
I am the only
person?
Bastion of good.
Do you remember the last person who tried to disrespect my boyfriend? They almost wound up as a smear on a church floor. So don't do that. My boyfriend is a good boy.
I mean... Vampires for sure. But that would be a really bad idea for Molly considering what her blood is. So
yeah, that would be very interesting.
Yeah. So for me, vampires 100%. Love those bite bats. For Molly, probably an angel.
Oh. Huh.
That's awesome.
Yes, angels are monsters.
Yeah.
Y'all don't even know.
Yeah.
I think the answer for me and for Aisha are the same. And the answer for me and for Aisha is that I can't decide and I want to date simultaneously a vampire, an angel, and a dryad. And so does Aisha.
Ooh.
I think dryads would be real nice. Dryads would be like just super sweet.
Between Minnie, Molly, and some of our vampires that are wandering around, we can accommodate you there.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa would date a vampire. Lori would date a centaur. Because then God he could help it. Pull, like... I'm sorry. He could, like, help pull a cart full of lumber. He could help her around the yard. She could hop on his back and they'd go riding off to the old grove and they'd have a picnic. Like, they'd just have a nice, good time.
That's
and
so
she could
good.
Give her truck a rest. Because he's also the transportation. I will pick you up on me at 8 o'clock.
That's so good.
I feel like centaurs would make good dads, too.
Yeah!
That's also true.
You always see him from behind a fence, and it's not until he steps out from behind the fence that you know he isn't just a man.
I'm now picturing a centaur with, like, a beat-up old cowboy hat and a flannel shirt on.
Yes!
Just leaning up against a fence, talking to his neighbor, and the neighbor doesn't even know it's a centaur.
Yes!
Like Home Improvement?
Yeah.
Yeah, Home Improvement centaur. That's Lori's dream man.
Doofa.
I know that Joe would date a tiefling because of the many I've crossed over the years and the sad backstories that I've given them, and I just want to make them feel good. Owen, after that experience, wouldn't want to date a werewolf, rather, but, like, secretly, like, he'd want to bone down with a werewolf.
Who among us does not want to secretly bone down with a werewolf?
Yeah, I don't think that's one that I would go for personally.
I'll pass.
So this next question was attributed to me. What the fuck?
So this time, what the fuck, is Port Avalon. I had this idea for a quiet Pacific Northwest mountain town, kind of a la Gravity Falls. And then I made the just blessed decision to present y'all with kind of the rough map I had drawn and say, hey, cast, what's here? And y'all went just fucking hog wild on this. Like, there's shandies now. The whole place is like a super chill hippie town. It's just y'all did so much to make it into the city it is now, and I love it because it's so much more than I could have ever done with just that map. And that is what the fuck this time.
Cool. And my last question is, hey, Matt, when are my gay sons getting a full season? My gay sons, for those of you who don't know, behind the curtain, the Masks one-shot that I ran, I call them my gay sons because they're all very queer and I love them all.
Joe, do you mean Fifth Watch, the next campaign in Lost Library that's going to start in September and air on Saturdays?
Gasp!
Oh, heck.
This little audio drama has been provided to you by us, the cast and creators of Lost Library.
We hope you like our Fifth superheroes.
It's yeah,
been
Fifth Watch
so much
with
fun.
Their whole crew is coming back on September. They're going to be on Saturdays. Should be like 3 episodes a month, I believe. It's going to be a good time.
No, it's really not. I run that game. It's not a good time for anyone.
Honestly, Masks is probably, in my opinion, the best Powered by the Apocalypse game that's out there.
I would agree.
I think it's my favorite.
It's so good. It's the one that handles like the emotional stuff the best. So, yeah, stand by for Fifth Watch coming in. And, you know, maybe down the line we'll have a landmark of downloads and Joe will have to do a Q&A session. So.
Yes.
All right.
I can just envision all of them being, why did you do that to these poor boys?
I mean, but then all you have to do is just cackle. It's fine. That's the easiest way to deal with that.
I can cackle in a South African accent. That's important.
Melissa, it's your turn to ask questions.
Well, first off, language in the house of the Lord. Matt, what the fudge?
So here's a true thing. Milo and Brian are two of the most important NPCs so far that we've met.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both provided through one of our test games. They were Christina and Melissa's characters, respectively, in our last test game, where they were recruited by Uriel after Uriel nuked the Natural History Museum from orbit because it had something very, very bad in it.
When will my test game daughter come back from the war?
I want all of our characters from that game to come back. They were very good.
So Alice, here's a fun thing. Mm-hmm. They Call Me D made an appearance in this last episode.
Oh, really?
Yup. Mm-hmm.
I was going to listen to mine tomorrow, but I might just listen to it after this then.
Well, from the time of release, last episode. From the time of recording, the episode coming out.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Oh, wait, no. He is in both, isn't he?
They are in both. Technically, he makes a cameo appearance in the third part.
That's true. He just intrudes onto the scene in a really deliberate way. It's great. They do. So test game characters are coming back in where I can use them.
I sent you a whole essay about how to bring back Sonnet. I just want my daughter to be okay.
I'm trying. I got to find the right moment, but I think I have a good one in mind. We've met one of Alan's test game characters. Y'all just don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean Cole?
Jeez.
No, my character was smarmy and gross, and yeah.
Died. We saw Alan's actual character. We saw Alan's actual character in the test game for one scene, and then he died off screen.
Yep.
And Alan kept playing.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Yep.
What?
I would be really amused if the only way Grace ever showed up in Grayscale is that sometimes there's just like explosions in the distance, and then there's just a bunch of dead monsters and like a like grenade launcher shell.
Yeah.
God. And that's all the entire way that Grace ever shows up.
Grace magic, and her whole team.
Magic grenade launchers break this game, apparently.
Oh my gosh.
God.
Yeah.
Grace fucked everything up in that game. It was just... Oh. So the thing with Monster of the Week is that if you roll like a 12 on the fuck shit up, I'm going to keep calling it fuck shit up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can choose to double your damage. And grenade launchers have an extremely large amount of damage already.
Especially when a magic user enchants it.
Yes. So I don't know what we fought. It was something real scary and supposedly very strong, but we just kept blowing it up instantly.
I think at every time, because you hit the 12 more than once, and that deals, as it turns out, 12 damage, and almost everything in Grace or in Monster of the Week has a health bar of 7. So grenade launchers just are fucky. Y'all have actually met the same thing y'all fought in that test game a couple times.
Yep.
I probably gave it a phobia of grenade launchers.
I mean, yes, now it absolutely hates them. So.
I feel like most people have a phobia of grenade launchers.
Anyone with... Yes.
All right, Melissa, what's your next question?
Why did you decide to collect such a huge cast and to work with 10 people rotating in and out instead of a regular party of 3, 4, or 5 people?
Okay, so apparently I can't just do a normal thing when I start a podcast. Because, like, the first time when I was first going to try to launch Lost Library with the Star Wars campaign, it was going to be this really convoluted and really work-intensive release schedule that would see us go through, like, an entire season of a campaign twice a year. It was bonkers and bad, and I'm glad I scrapped it. So then when I came back to the Lost Library idea, I was just like, okay, well, here's an idea. It's just going to be like the town is the feature, and everyone that lives in the town just kind of deals with the supernatural. So if I get a big cast in, I can just rotate through characters, and it'll be fun and interesting to see a lot of different perspectives, which is true. And part of me was like, that'll be easier, because then every participant only has to do like 4 episodes in the year. So that's not even a huge time commitment on that end. And man, I'm wrong about a lot of things. But that was the rationale. It was just like I wanted something that would kind of set Grayscale apart from a lot of other actual plays. And I figured, hey, if I can present people with like, if y'all promise me the year, you'll only have to do like 4 big appearances, and that'll be it, and it'll be fun. So
that's, you made a real noble sacrifice in giving us 4 episodes a year, and then you have to wrangle all of this.
I didn't think that through.
Nope.
But I wouldn't change it now.
How long have we been going now?
In the show, we have done 5 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
There are 7 more to go.
Okay.
The last 2 of season 1 are going to be basically a 2-part season finale.
Neat.
Matt, I have a follow-up question.
Okay.
Is there any chance that you might use something from the original Lost Library to do a blind box?
I've thought about it. I have certainly considered it. I'm not going to make any promises right now for the big reason that I don't want my voice on the blind boxes. I want that space to be for anyone, not me. As much as possible. I think I've been in a blind box already. I think. Maybe.
You did the intro for Interstitial. I know that, but.
Yeah.
I can only speak to the one that I edited.
That's, yes. That was like the one instance. Like, I want the blind box grounds and like, even other campaigns that show up here eventually. I want this space to be for other people. Like, I want to get non-my voice as much as possible
what
out there.
What if you play, and then in post, someone, like, one of us, like, dubs your lines?
Hey, Alice, do you like Mistborn?
I don't know what it is.
Oh, good. Perfect.
I don't want Alice to have to dub over my shitty boy. He's very bad. He's a bit of an asshole.
Just a bit. He gets slapped a lot.
You think I can't be an asshole?
And I kind of love him. forthcoming from Lost Library.
I can be an asshole.
Yeah, I don't want to put that badness on you, Alice, if you're not asking for it. But yeah, that's kind of why I've been hesitant to do a blind box of my own, is because I want that space to be for other voices.
Mm-hmm. My final question is, Matt, what was your turning point from, oh, I've had this idea and that might be a fun project sometime, to, oh, I think I could actually make this happen?
I had the idea, and then I went and talked to Alan, Christina, Riley, and Joe, who were the original 4 on the first attempt at it, and was like, hey, y'all want to try again? And they said yes, and I was like, all right, I guess we're doing this. And then it all happened. And it keeps on happening. And at this point, I think I just better hope it doesn't not happen, because I might die.
Mm-hmm.
If it just stopped. So I just flipped the switch one day.
Good.
And here we are.
Yep.
I have.
And that brings us to Nora's questions. For real this time.
Hello. I have 2 questions, one for Matt and one for everyone else. Although Matt can pitch in on that second one if he has like an idea for an NPC. My first question is, when Uriel talks to people, does he take them somewhere, or is that inside their head?
A lot of times, Uriel doesn't feel the need to transpose anyone anywhere else. Uriel has a special interest in Minnie.
Mm-hmm.
And is just desperately trying to get Minnie to accept what he sees as her destiny. And he's also dramatic as fuck.
Right.
So he was trying to make a big point, and it did not work. Or at least not in the way he intended. Most times, no, he'll just talk to him.
Okay. Noted.
In that case, he actually literally, like, froze time and pulled Minnie up to the gates of heaven.
I see. Just making notes. Making notes, making plans. Second question for the cast is, what would your character's favorite Star Wars movie be?
Huh.
Huh.
Mallory would probably go with A New Hope, I think. Simply because it's a very classic story structure, so it's something she's going to be very familiar with. It's the journey of the hero and that kind of thing. Plus, I think she will have a crush on both Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford.
I see.
Owens is absolutely the Last Jedi because most of his entire existence is letting the past die.
Nice.
Aisha, as a film, would like The Last Jedi the most, but I think Aisha has the box set of all the ones that Queen Amidala appears in just to drool over the costumes.
Somewhere she's working on that first big ceremonial dress that had the glowing bulbs at the bottom, I'm sure, right?
Yes. And then she's going to pretend to be the ghost of Queen Amidala.
Nice.
That's going to be very good.
That's very good.
Ah, I thought about this once, and I think Lori, she might be more of a Star Trek person, but...
That tracks.
I mean, even people who don't like...
How dare you?
Even people who don't like Star Wars have a Star Wars that they hate the least.
That's true.
She does still like a Star Wars. I think she's at the age where she probably grew up with the original trilogy, and her kids might have grown up with the prequel trilogy. And I think she's a soft spot for the prequels, probably because she likes Ewan McGregor with that beard.
Who doesn't?
I'll agree.
Maybe she also does not like sand.
I mean, it's coarse and it gets everywhere.
To briefly answer my own question, Molly is a big fan of Clone Wars TV show and Last Jedi.
I think if I can speak for this, Milo probably claims to like Return of the Jedi because of the redemption arc in it. But ever since Last Jedi came out, I think Milo's been listening to Luke's speech just over and over again, and it just is getting to him more and more. And I think Brian watches the last 5 minutes of Rogue One pretty much on a loop.
I think Brian was present for the filming of the holiday special.
Oh. So, Joe, have Owen and Mallory had a Star Wars like movie marathon party? Because I think the answer is yes.
I think the answer is yes, and actually one of the meanwhiles will be set during that.
Cool.
Was that when Port Avalon's drive-in theater showed all of them in a row?
Yes, even though Mallory was still pretty trepidatious about cars. Yes.
Very good.
I'm a fan.
All right, well... Man, I think that brings us to the end of our first Q&A session.
Yay!
Yay! That was a lot of fun, y'all.
Just a tight hour 50 recording time here.
So
we're probably going to do more of these down the line when we hit some other landmarks. So keep an ear out. Keep an eye on our Twitter page, everybody. Like I said, we'll probably make Joe do one of these for Fifth Watch. When Mistborn launches, we'll probably make Alan do one of these for Mistborn. And we'll have some good times. We'll come back to this with Grayscale. Probably at the end of season one, we'll do one of these because I'm just deliberately aping the Adventure Zone zone because it's a very good idea.
You know what I always say? Rather have landmarks than land sharks.
100%.
Truth.
Yeah. Fuck a land shark.
Probably uncomfortable.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, shark scales only feel smooth from one direction.
Not recommended.
I thought they smelt bad on the inside.
And that's where we're done. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The Lost Library is a production of the Fifth Draw family of podcasts and can be found at fifthdraw.com. You can email us at lostlibrary@fifthdraw.com or follow us on Twitter @LostLibraryCast.